Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Dan McNeil. Danny Parkins.
Oh, here we go.
Afternoons on The Score.
So we're getting ready to go to Arizona to do some spring training. We're going. I know Bernstein and McKnight is going. And Mitch posed, instead of getting a hotel, let's get a house. Let's get, an Airbnb, The Score Chateau.
Hey, baby! I like this kind of party.
He just sent a listing to us. The headline of this listing says $500,000 pool with lazy river.
Let's go on the water slide.
I can't fit. I'm afraid I'll get stuck. I'll just go in the lazy river.
But Dad.
No, son. This is the life I've chosen.
7 bedrooms, 11 beds, sleep 16 guests. This pool lights up.
Light it up, folks.
Guess who else is going to be in a Speedo when The Score goes to spring training next month? I got a text from Mully during the break. Consider us in.
What happens?
What?
When people stop being polite
and start getting real.
And there's a new addition to the list.
Okay.
Yeah. Grobber called Mitch. He wants a piece of this.
Stop.
Grobber wants in.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
Instead of chicken salad, it becomes chicken soup.
Right.
Which is always
right.
A good thing.
What's up, Lawrence?
Hello, men.
Lawrence Holmes, tell us. Tell us good news. Tell us you will be our Arizona housemate for the spring training Score broadcast. Second week of March, I believe.
Second week of March?
First
you guys
or
going
second.
There?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
So where's the house?
The house is in Scottsdale.
You're already living, right?
All day Score broadcast.
I think that's probably a great idea. You guys can have a lot of fun down there.
You keep saying you got.
I have to return some videotapes. It's
conditional, yes.
You're going to go conditional, yes?
Yes,
awesome.
Conditional, yes.
My man, excellent. That's a success.
You can put it on the board, yes!
And that's how you get a 16,000 square foot house in Scottsdale.
Yo! Saddle up! Lock and load!
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons 1 to 6 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
It's going to be the Score Chateau, all the shows, spring training, coming soon to a radio station near you.
Yeah, we'll circle back to this breaking story because there's more a little bit later on. We got NFL to do. I had a nice visit with David Haw last night. He and I are going to represent. We're going to have the Ball State wing in our Scottsdale mansion. So,
okay, I can't wait to hear all the follow-ups of the particulars and the clauses.
Charity songs already being penned for the trip. It's all happening.
This hour on The Score brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards. So, coming up, you're going to hear 4 guests from the 4 cities represented in Championship Sunday. We're doing it in order. We're starting with the road team in the NFC Championship game. So we go to LA and welcome on the managing editor of Rams Wire from USA Today. Cameron DeSilva is our guest. Cameron, we very much appreciate your time. It's something that I've been watching and kind of amazed with. Where did CJ Anderson come from? We know about Todd Gurley. How did CJ Anderson get into the mix?
Yeah, it was kind of weird. After that Week 15 game where Todd Gurley banged up his knee a little bit, the Rams released Farrell Cooper, who was an all-pro returner last year, and it was a move that kind of came out of nowhere. And then shortly thereafter, they signed C.J. Anderson, and he kind of read the tea leaves and understood that maybe Todd Gurley wasn't fully healthy, and this is exactly why they released Cooper. But in the last 3 games, he's rushed for at least 100 yards in every one, and he's done a great job. He's only 27 years old. It feels like everyone's talking about him like he's 35. But he's provided a spark to this offense, which you wouldn't expect to say about a running back of his style, where he's kind of that, he's almost like a bowling ball going down the middle. But he has provided a spark, and he's allowed Todd Gurley to rest and stay fresh throughout the game. So it's helped them a lot.
How healthy are the Rams as they get ready for Sunday?
It doesn't get any healthier than them. They haven't had a single player on the injury report all week. Todd Gurley is fully healthy. Nobody's even been limited in practice this week. So there are absolutely no concerns on, as far as injuries go.
We're obviously tracking young quarterbacks here as they get into their second and third year in systems because of where Mitch Trubisky is in his development. And I struggle with Jared Goff. How much of his success and production is because he is great, or is it because he's in a great system?
You know, last year you could have said it was more about the latter, where he's in a good system that fits his skill set, and Sean McVay had a lot to do with that. But I think this year, aside from those few games where he struggled against the Lions, Bears, and Eagles, he really had a tremendous season, and it was mostly his doing. It wasn't Sean McVay setting him up and making all these pre-snap reads and giving him easy throws. He threw into tight windows more often. He threw downfield more often and more accurately. The arrival of Brandon Cooks has really helped him. He not only gained yards after the catch to boost his numbers, but he's just a far better deep threat than Sammy Watkins was last year. So you've seen some good development from Goff this season, and he's taken those steps towards becoming one of the, I don't want to say elite, but one of those better quarterbacks where he's well above average, and he's a guy that really looks like the number one overall pick from a few years ago.
What has the absence of Cooper Kupp done to the Rams' offense?
What it's hurt most, I would say, is on third down. He was kind of that security blanket for Goff, the way that tight ends across the league are for their quarterbacks. He mostly ran underneath routes, and it's kind of that security blanket where he can separate from coverage, not being the fastest guy, but just with his route running and his awareness against, say, zone coverage, he knows when to sit down in a zone and get open for Goff. He was available for that first Saints game, and he had a big game, a touchdown, and I think more than 80 yards or something around that number. But obviously he won't be available in this one, so Josh Reynolds is going to have to step up in his place.
Zach Strief is coming up, former Saints lineman and member of Saints Radio, but we're talking to Cameron DeSilva right now from Rams Wire as we preview the NFC Championship game. Why, in your opinion, has this all-star name cast of Rams defenders, why hasn't it led to a great Rams defense?
I think the absence of Aqib Talib in that middle part of the season where he missed 8 games, I think that really hurt them. It had a big impact on the defense, and it didn't do them any favors as far as Marcus Peters in the secondary or that pass rush. It really hurt them when Talib went down based on his leadership, his talent at cornerback. And then they just don't have much edge pressure. They brought in Dante Fowler, who's worked out well, but they just don't get enough pressure off of the edges to complement guys like Sue and Donald on the middle.
Cameron, here in the Midwest, Los Angeles has a reputation of having very fair weather fan bases. Indifferent, I think, is a word often used to describe fans. How has the city embraced this team? Is it warmed up to it yet?
Yeah, absolutely. We saw in that playoff game against the Cowboys, I mean, the Coliseum was packed. It was the same way last year against the Falcons. And I guess you could say that plays into the fair weather fan thing where they only show up for the playoff games. But attendance was up this year from last season. Really, fans are excited about this game, and they're excited about the prospect of being able to play and possibly play in a Super Bowl. They want this game badly. A lot of them want to see a rematch with the Patriots to avenge that loss years ago. But these fans are really embracing this team. They're embracing Sean McVay and everything that they're about right now.
Biggest key to a Rams win is what?
I would say running the ball and protecting Jared Goff. I mean, that sounds simple, but last week against the Cowboys, we saw them do a great job protecting Goff. He wasn't sacked at all. And then we saw the running lanes that they had against that Cowboys defensive front. The linebackers for the Cowboys are two really good players, Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith, and you really didn't hear their name called very often in that game, and that's because of the job that the offensive line did. So if they play that well again this week, it sets up nicely for a Rams victory.
Cameron DeSilva from Rams Wire. We appreciate very much the time, Rams Wire, an offshoot of USA Today. So now we transfer to the other team in the NFC Championship game.
His dog said goodbye. Nice.
Yeah, Cameron's got to go take care of his dog anyway. Zach Strief, former Saints lineman and the play-by-play voice of Saints Radio.
Yeah, Zach, good afternoon. Thanks for the time. How you feeling, man?
I'm doing great, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on.
I got to ask you about one of the more difficult assignments for the big fellas up front for the Saints, and that is handling Aaron Donald. The Bears did a nice job when they beat him a few weeks ago. To my surprise, much of it was in single blocking. They didn't ask a ton of guys to help James Daniels, a rookie guard out of Iowa, to take care of it. What do you believe is the best way to handle this outstanding defensive lineman?
Well, I think you got to do a lot of different stuff. I don't think there's a real simple, hey, let's just slide every protection to him because it's too easy to capitalize on and take advantage of with the rest of the defense. So, you know, I think there's a lot to it. The number one thing, if you want to neutralize Aaron Donald, is run the football effectively and run the football at him. Don't let him play off the backside. Make him take on double team blocks, wear him out, and go right at him. And I think that's, you know, usually the story with a really good pass rusher is you want to attack those guys and make them play the run. And if you can do that effectively, it's going to help you down the road. But no matter what, listen, it's a big challenge for anybody. Aaron Donald is a phenomenal player. He's at the top of his game right now. He's been fantastic all season. So it's a big challenge no matter what. But I think that's the way to do it. It's not about how many people can we throw over there to block him, because it's going to open up holes all over your front. It's more about, can you stay balanced? Can you put him in a position where he's not just freely rushing the passer every snap?
Speaking of fantastic defensive linemen, the Saints lost theirs in Sheldon Rankins when he ruptured his Achilles. How big of a problem is it going to be stopping the run without Rankins?
Well, I mean, I think stopping the run, quite honestly, is the thing you feel the best about if you're a Saints fan, and that's regardless of what the Rams have done in the last couple of weeks. First of all, the final 2 weeks of the season, I'm sorry, and I am a homer. I played for the Saints for 12 years, but I'm not giving them any credit for rushing the football against those two teams who showed no ability to stop the run during the season as is. Last week, obviously, a great job against a really good Rams front or the Dallas front. But listen, losing Sheldon is a big deal. He's been phenomenal for the Saints. He really has been tremendous all year long. But they feel really good about the guys that they've got behind him. The young Taylor Stallworth came in last week, played at a high level. David Onyemata is one of the strongest and most underrated three techniques in football. So stopping the run without Sheldon, I think, can be done. I think your question comes up in the pass rush, and can you replace that amount of pass rush production? And that'll be a big challenge for him up front.
Our guest is Zach Strief, former Northwestern Wildcat. If you were to do a Mount Rushmore of Saints offensive linemen, his mug would be right there for you. I love Taysom Hill. He fascinates me. What's his ceiling, Zach?
Yeah, I mean, I think he fascinates everyone. I think you're sharing that feeling with a lot of people. He's so much fun to watch. He's so versatile. And I think he's with the perfect guy right now in Sean Payton, who knows that he can utilize them all over the place. And listen, at the end of the day, I think they still believe that Taysom Hill can be a good quarterback in this league. And that's really the fascinating thing about him is, you know, does this slash role continue forever, or does Taysom settle in somewhere as a backup? You know, I think the reality is if he's even your number two guy, I don't know if you use him how you use him. So I think, you know, Taysom's ceiling is high because he's a tremendous athlete. He's 230 pounds. He's carved out of granite, and he runs a 4.4. And those guys don't grow on trees, and you know, the Saints are finding all kinds of ways to use him. And unfortunately, you know, the throw of the year this season for Taysom Hill was called back on a holding penalty on a 54-yard touchdown to Alvin Kamara last week. And I think you kind of see in that play that he is a quarterback. He's not a running back that throws spirals.
What, if anything, do we glean from one of the three or four most memorable games of this NFL season when the Saints gave the Rams their first loss earlier, 45-35?
Well, you know, for one, I think it's a little taste of what that atmosphere is going to be like, which was electric for that game. It was a huge game in the moment for both teams, really. Obviously, I think all of the Saints knew that was going to be the other team in the race in the NFC for the one seed. And the Saints talked about that last year in Minnesota. If we want to get to the Super Bowl, we have to make this game happen in New Orleans. And they were able to do that with the one seed. And but you look at that game, listen, the Saints offensively at that point were really flying about as high as any team in the history of football. And they showed it in that game. Touchdowns on all five first half possessions in that game. In the second half, you know, you see the firepower from the Rams as they tie it up late. And then ultimately, and this is where I think the Saints become the best team in football, the fourth quarter this year for the Cincinnati. Sorry, I'm from Cincinnati. The fourth quarter for the Saints this year, they've just been phenomenal. It's the number one scoring differential in football by almost 100% off of second place. It's the number one scoring team. They're about the number five scoring team. They haven't given up a point in the fourth quarter in five games in New Orleans. So, and you saw that in that game. The Saints scored 10 unanswered to end that one, including the 72-yard game winner to Mike Thomas, which spurred all kinds of after-the-fact moments here in New Orleans on social media between him and Marcus Peters. And listen, I think that matchup is going to be phenomenal to watch again, that being Mike Thomas and these cornerbacks from the Rams.
Yeah, let's talk about Michael Thomas. Is he the best wide receiver in the NFL? Why would you rather have him instead of Hopkins or A. Brown?
I mean, he's in the conversation, right? And you, it's hard always in this league to say who the best is, because those guys you mentioned, D. Hopkins and A.B. are phenomenal. Wide receivers are great. But what Mike Thomas brings that I think you see different than anyone else, one, the level of competitiveness that kid shows, not game in and game out, but day in and day out. He looks the same in practice. He looks offended that someone's attempting to cover him. And I think you see that on game day. So he's incredibly competitive. He's a really physical receiver. He's long and rangy. Alvin Kamara said this week, he just doesn't look normal. And I think that causes some people to question whether he is the prototype wide receiver. But the nuances of the position, Mike Thomas is coming close to mastering. He does a great job creating separation and might have the strongest hands in traffic of any receiver I've ever been around. So he's a handful for anybody, because he wants the ball. He's going to find a way to get the ball, and he's got a guy throwing it to him that has a ton of confidence in him.
Last thing from me with Zach Strief, Saints play-by-play man. We'll preview the AFC Championship game coming up next. Drew Brees just turned 40. Is he still in his prime?
Sure looks like it, huh? I mean, listen, he's completing over 74% of his passes this season. What I think you've seen over the last 2 years is a team that has shifted away from putting every game on his back and more into a team that understands the importance of a solid running game, controlling the clock, playing good, solid defense behind him. And that's something we haven't had here in New Orleans forever. And so I think, you know, the instinct is to watch the passing numbers and decide, is that what makes the difference in a quarterback? And ultimately, I think Drew Brees is doing what he needs to do to win games now better than he has at any point in his career. Now, listen, he's 40 years old, and decline will start to occur. But the thing you love about Drew Brees late in his career is Drew Brees hasn't survived and he hasn't succeeded based on a bunch of physical attributes. Drew Brees doesn't have a great arm. Drew Brees isn't the world's best athlete. He's not, you know, running to his left and throwing back to his right 60 yards. He's gotten here on preparation and attention to detail, and those things have only gotten better. And I think that's why you see him thriving at an older age, whereas a guy who's always relied on his arm strength, you might see a decline in his play as he gets older.
Zach, we're both longtime radio geeks. Tell us about the graduation from player to play-by-play man. How did you develop your chops? What kind of coaching have you had along the way?
Well, it's certainly been an interesting road for me. You know, the opportunity that came up to replace a guy who's an icon in New Orleans and Jim Henderson just kind of happened on chance. And I essentially asked if they would allow me the opportunity to try and audition, to try to develop that skill. And anybody that knows radio understands the difficulties in doing radio play-by-play for football and all the complexities of it. And I think more than anything, my relationship in the city and with the New Orleans Saints provided me that opportunity. And it's been a big learning curve and a learning experience. But, man, it couldn't have happened in a better year. And I think we've come a long way. I get to do it alongside a former teammate, Deuce McAllister, who's helped me a ton. And really, the entire industry has been wonderful with me. There's been a bunch of guys along the way. Jim Henderson being one who I replaced, and Jerry Sandusky, the voice of the Baltimore Ravens, has been phenomenal with me spending time, and even Dave Emmett up in Chicago, the voice of my Wildcats. Lots of people that have reached out and offered support, and it's something, listen, it's going to take a long time to develop, and it's going to take years like it does for everyone else, but I couldn't be in a better position or having any more fun than I am right now.
Great stuff, man. Thank you for the time. Have a good call on Sunday.
Enjoyed it, Zach. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Have a great one.
That's Zach Stree, former Wildcat, Saints play-by-play man.
Number 64 in your program, number one in your heart. Shout out to Dave Annett, who was on Swirsky's staff when I interned under the Swirsk at GM back in 1985. I hear say his name, and I got to say things as him. Shame on me.
Coming up next, Fred Tutcher from the Tutcher and Rich Show, WEEI in Boston, and then Therese Paylor, former Chiefs beat writer, one of the best national now columnists and reporters for Yahoo Sports. We preview the AFC Championship game next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Do you mind playing in severe cold?
Love to play in a championship game. Schedule whoever you want. We'll be there.
Does it change the play calling? Does it make it harder to throw?
I don't know. It's Wednesday. We'll see what happens Sunday night. Right now, we're getting ready for the Chiefs.
Your last visit to Kansas City was not a good memory. Is that something you think you and Tom can use as motivation?
Yeah, I don't think that game has anything to do with this one. We're going to get ready for Sunday.
He is the best.
Yeah, that's something.
I find it entertaining. Yeah, I hate to have to cover it.
I know. Well, you get the championships. You get to go to the Super Bowl most years. But, yeah, the sound bites aren't fantastic. But there's kind of a residual benefit of having Bill Belichick as your city's head coach.
All right, we just previewed the NFC Championship game. We're live at Cubs Convention. Come say what's up. It's McNeil and Parkins on The Score. Now time for the AFC Championship game. So we go to Boston. Fred Tutcher from the Tutcher and Rich Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub, joins us. Yeah, something tells me, Fred, that no one in Boston cares that he's not the greatest quote, right?
Well, no, there's two things that get him going. One is talking about punters, and second is a little music by the Bon Jovi. If you talk about Bon Jovi, he immediately lights up. So that is a way to the man's heart.
All right, well, if we ever get him, Mac, that's the way we'll start
him out. Bon Jovi's the way. You know, my partner and I differ, Fred, on the way the Patriots are handling this thing. I kind of see Brady's point when he says the world has written us off. Not before the year, but during the year, there was a ton of discussion that these aren't the old Patriots. I mean, do you think it's manufactured emotion exclusively, or do you think he really feels that way?
I think that it's manufactured emotion. I think that they realize, well, first of all, Edelman's selling shirts for $30. That something, some message about how no one respects them. So if you buy one of those, you're a dope. But, you know, they were favored in that Chargers game. I mean, they were favorites. I don't understand where all this is coming from. I mean, Tom has made a cottage industry of people doubting him. I mean, that's what his business plan is. That's what his business is going to be, is that look at how I'm overcoming all these odds, and that's what the TB12 centers are. So I get him. But, no, and again, you guys, if you need that kind of inspiration going to an AFC championship game, you're a loser. I mean, you don't need that. I mean, you're used to the situation. The Patriots are completely healthy, literally completely healthy, and they're going into a place with a quarterback who this has never played at this kind of game before, and I don't know all that other crap.
Do you think you echo the sentiments of Patriots fans, or are they lapping it up?
The Patriots fans are, like, so used to all of this. It's hard to tell. Like, you know, I think a lot of Patriots fans are kind of
happy. Outside of Boston than in Boston.
Oh, outside of Boston are lapping up that they're underdogs?
So I'm saying it's a bigger story outside of Boston that they're playing the underdog card, whereas in Boston they're just like, oh, okay, this is what they do.
I mean, nationally, I saw the ESPN had an article saying how, quoting all these people about how they weren't the underdog. But, yeah, I mean, anytime Tom Brady says something that doesn't look like it was cut out of a Dr. Seuss book, I mean, people freak out. I mean, the fact that he said, I guess we all suck now, I could see how that could make people think that, you know, something weird was going on. But they know who they are, and they're a very healthy team. And, no, that whole narrative that no one thinks they can win is complete crap. What is this spread? 4? I mean, give me a break.
3.
With all that.
Fred Tutcher from Tutcher and Rich, 98.5, the Sports Hub in Boston. Do you think Gronk retires at the end of the year?
Yeah. And I thought he should have done it last year. here's the deal, is that there becomes like diminishing returns. There's no way the Patriots are going to pay him what he's due. I think he's due something like $18 million next year. And so say that number falls to, you know, something much less. Now you're talking about what's the difference between the pay he gets off the field in terms of endorsements, if he wants to do wrestling, if he, you know, sucks in a couple movies. I mean, that number becomes very, very close. And think about it. If you're Gronkowski, who I love, by the way, personally, the guy's great. But if you're Gronkowski, it can't be much fun not to be as good as you were. I mean, he's an excellent blocker, but I mean, I'm sure, you know, when he started the season, he didn't think to himself, oh, I really want to help the running game. So I got to imagine that it's not as fun. And on top of that, these injuries are all chronic. And your back's not something to mess around with. And if I had his injury history that goes back to college, I mean, that's why he was a second-round pick, I'm not playing anymore. And I truly think that this time he's not going to do it, regardless if they make the Super Bowl, regardless if they win in the Super Bowl. I think this is it for him, for sure.
The Patriots, Fred, the Patriots defensively surprised me how well they played against the Chargers, but are they good enough to shut down the Chiefs?
No. They're not good enough to shut down the Chiefs.
Let me put it to you this way. No. Okay.
No, their secondary is great. Are very good. Their defensive line played spectacular in the Chargers game, but that Chargers game was weird because it just seemed like the Chargers, as you guys know, if you watched it, I'm sure you watched it, that they just did not adjust to anything. So, I mean, the Patriots had a game plan and they didn't have to change anything. The front seven traditionally for the Patriots this year hasn't been very good. They're playing a lot better right now, but they're not particularly quick at linebacker. No one on their defensive line except for Flowers will scare you. And no, they're not. I don't think that they can slow down Kansas City. The big dream here was that it was going to be like -3, but now I guess it's going to be in the 20s. And that -3, that Mahomes throws the ball too hard, and that's going to, he's not going to complete anything, and that it's going to slow down Tyreek Hill, even though they heat the field. So, no, I don't think that and when they played in Foxborough, Mahomes was tight the first quarter of that game, and they still only lost by 3. And they put up 35 points or something. So, no, there's no slowing down that Kansas City offense. And don't give me that Kareem Hunt's not playing, because they're on their third-string running back, and he looked plenty good to me against the Colts.
Do you think the Pats are going to win?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why?
Okay.
Because they're the Patriots. And because this is just what happened. I think that this is an opportunity. It's going to be a lot better than last week in that Arrowhead's an incredibly bad place to play. They've been awful on the road. They have 3 road wins. One's legit. They beat you guys. And then they beat the Jets in Buffalo. And that Jets team could have been beaten by it could have been beaten by Clemson, Alabama, or Oklahoma. I'm not kidding. That Jets team they put out that day could have, and I'm a Jets fan. And so, you know, everything's against them. They suck on the road. Arrowhead's a terrible place to play. They're against the mobile quarterback, who they've had problems with in the past. But it just seems like with all the struggles that they had this year for the Patriots, you know, that going 3-5 on the road, it's just all coming together at the right time. And I don't recall people far more intelligent than me and were willing to put in the effort were giving like the lineups they had in the AFC championship games they've lost and that all the players that they were down. So I don't know, man. I've been here for so long, since 2006, and you know, they always just win. That's it. Is that they just always win. And I'd have to go to Atlanta, where there's 3 hours at TSA to get back here. I'm not looking forward to that. But nonetheless, yeah, I like the Patriots.
Fred, more intelligent than I, by the way.
It also sounds like you don't want them to win.
I don't care. But I just want it to be interesting, you know? I just want something interesting to happen outside of a Super Bowl. Because when I first moved here, the Jets upset them, and then the Ravens came so close to beating them at home. I just I just want a game that your heart's in your throat at the end. You know what I'm saying? I don't want some systematic domination or some game that, you know, they kind of figure things out and they're running and the Patriots can just run the ball all over the place and it ends up being, you know, close but really low scoring. I want to see Kansas City be high flying, and then, you know, you obviously trust Brady in those situations. But to be honest with you, I don't care. I spent 8 years in Atlanta, so I'd like to see friends there. But I don't particularly care who wins the Super Bowl or who wins this game. Do you guys always care?
No, obviously not. But you're in the city with the AFC Championship game.
No, I'm saying if there's a Chicago team in a championship, do you always like have a rooting interest?
Yeah, yes. We're Bears fans. Well, yeah, and we like to travel on the company dime as much as anything.
Boston's seen too many titles if you don't care who wins the AFC Championship game.
Well, like the guy calls me from work and he's like, hey, we're looking at hotels. What do you think of, you live there, what do you think about staying by the airport? So, no, traveling on the company dime sucks. They've treated us like trash. But hopefully that gets all worked out. But no, I'm not from here, so my allegiances lie elsewhere. But I listen, it helps the bottom line when they win.
I don't care!
Fred Toucher and Rich. Thank you, Fred.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
Yeah.
That was awesome. I think Boston's won too many titles.
Yeah, I think so. Let's hope our last guest in our wraparounds has more enthusiasm for the topic, huh?
That will not be a problem. Terrific. He was the Chiefs beat writer when I was there. He's a good buddy of mine. Now he is a national columnist, reporter, and podcast host. The Yahoo NFL podcast with Charles Robinson and our next guest, Therese Paylor. Therese, I know you are very excited for the AFC title game.
Yeah. Park, that was good. Yes, look, man, I love the game of football. I'm 34 years old. You know, I'm from the city of Detroit, but I lived in Kansas City the last 12 years. I've chosen to stay here, even though I'm a national guy now. And I know how important this game is to the city and the people who live here. Last week's game, where they beat the Indianapolis Colts, basically was the end of a postseason curse for Kansas City. That was pretty bad, dude. Like, since 95, they were like 1-11 in playoff games prior to that win. So now people are very excited about these Chiefs. Everybody's got Patrick Mahomes fever. Arrowhead Stadium, surprisingly, has never hosted an AFC Championship game. People here are ready to roll.
You know, the pass rush the Chiefs put on Luck the other day surprised no one. Parkins, with his Kansas City-ness, turned me on to Chris Jones middle of the season, and I've always loved Dee Ford, and Justin Houston's a pretty well-known name. What surprised me was how well they shut down the run. Patriots run the ball pretty well. I think that's kind of a critical matchup to watch Sunday, don't you?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the first thing any team is going to try to do with Chiefs defense is run the football. Okay. This is the number 31 ranked run defense in the National Football League. They do a lot of read and react. They're not particularly aggressive downhill, and they lose gap discipline. Okay, so what we saw last week was a team that was more aggressive downhill, that was more gaps down. It fared pretty well. They outgained those guys 180-87 on the ground yards wise. So look, the Chiefs' path to victory starts there. Because if you let the Patriots control the tempo with the run game and pound away for 3 or 4 or 5 yards on first and second down, now you're giving Brady third and threes, which he's going to convert with flare passes or screens to James White or in routes and slants to Julian Edelman or crossing routes. So that's making it very easy for that guy. So, yes, the Chiefs' defensive game plan absolutely has to start with making sure Sony Michel stays tied up.
Therese, they've played each other quite a bit the last couple of years, and even though the Chiefs only have the one win, the Thursday night beatdown last year to open the season, they've had consistent success, right? One possession game in the divisional round a couple of years ago, hung 40 on the board in a loss this year. What do the Chiefs do so well that the Patriots seem to have trouble with?
It's just a well-schemed offense. You know, Andy Reid, as a play caller, as an innovator, he is absolutely, you know, when Bill Belichick and his defense faces those guys, like, they know they're going to see some stuff that they haven't seen before. And he's going to have some tricks for them. And it's going to be a well-schemed, disciplined offense that's going to attack their weaknesses. He knows that. The thing is whether or not the Patriots can make those adjustments in time for them to come out with a victory. And they typically have. But compared to most offenses, you've got a scheme that's better, a play caller that's better, and a quarterback that's better than most of the people that the Patriots will play. So, I mean, it really comes down to that. Andy Reid is not afraid to throw to a third-string tight end, which is pretty unpredictable. You just kind of never know. He's going to have tricks. And his first 15 this week, with this being an Arrowhead, I fully expect those. I fully expect his first 15 plays, which is scripted, to be fired.
Eric Berry apparently is going to play, but he's done nothing this year. Is there any reason to expect that he's a contributor in this game?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, he's played two games this year. He didn't play the whole way in both those games. But, like, if you watched him play in those games, you wouldn't necessarily think that he's hurt. Like, if you actually watched him, he was like, oh, he's moving pretty good for a guy with a Haglund deformity. Like, he's like, oh, he's moving around. And more than that, he was really engaged in getting guys squared up and lined away. Squared away and lined up, sorry, which makes a lot of sense. Because he's a veteran of the scheme. He's been in it for 6 years. So I actually think he'll have a very tangible impact on the Chiefs' defense, even if he's not like 100%, which he won't be. Even 85% Eric Berry is an upgrade over what they've had.
Therese, I remember kind of vividly the Chiefs' last Super Bowl appearance. I was 10. Boy, they were good that day on both sides of the ball. Try to put this into words. What would a Super Bowl appearance mean to your city?
Well, I mean, all you have to do is look at what the Royals World Series meant to the city a couple of years ago. Like, they had a million people downtown. And Kansas City is one of the smallest NFL markets, okay? Like, this is a small market. However, they're always, like, around the top in the top 10 in attendance. You know, like, they fill that giant stadium up. Because people here really love their football and they love their Chiefs. But the amount of heartbreak this team's put them through, finally being able to get over the hump with the Super Bowl would be amazing. Just in the sense that I think that they finally be free from the negativity and Bill Murray-ish pessimism that they've kind of dealt with over the last 20, 30, 40 years. So that's what it would mean. Like, it's nowhere near, like, the Cubs curse or whatever. But in its own little football way, the Kansas City knows what the Cubs are dealing with, kind of. Because, you know, 100 years versus 40 is a different deal, right? But, you know, in their own kind of way, it would really, really mean a lot.
And, Therese, in my experience, even, and I was there for the Royals World Series, it's a football town, man. I saw those ratings. The ratings for Chiefs-Colts, wild card, you know what I mean? The last week, the divisional round, those were the ratings of Game 7 of the World Series.
I assume the city shut down.
It will be ridiculous. And people were abandoning their cars to go to the Royals World Series. They were abandoning their cars on the highway. So I think it'll be bigger than a Royals World Series.
Yeah, I mean, I was using it as a reference point. Like, a million people came out for that. I mean, Kansas City loves it's always been a football town, and there's no doubt about that. And look, if these people can get a chance to see that, you're going to see a lot of red down in Atlanta. These folks here are going to spend their money and go to that game. I guarantee you that.
Therese Paylor, Yahoo reporter, writer, and host of a terrific NFL podcast, the Yahoo NFL Podcast with Charles Robinson. Appreciate it, man. Enjoy the game.
Thanks.
Okay, my man. Take care, guys.
All right, that's Therese Paylor from Yahoo. There you go, four cities, four teams. Hopefully
Very
you learned
nice.
A little bit.
Yeah, I thought our first guest on the Rams was a bloop single. I thought Zach Strief doubled off the wall. Fred went down on three pitches. Actually, it took more than three pitches to get him out, but it was Therese singled up the middle sharply to drive in Zach Strief, so all's good.
Okay. Yeah, Therese is great. His phone was a little bad. He's fantastic. Fred was just completely ambivalent to the time.
Yeah, I don't think we need to call him again.
How do you get sick of covering a Super Bowl? Like, good God.
Making millions doing sports talk radio and becoming really jaded.
Oh, my
he's
goodness.
He's not from there. I don't know. I bet he doesn't act like that on the air in Boston. I don't think that would go over real well with Patriots fans. I don't care if they don't win Sunday.
Yeah, I think that's a bad bad place to be as a sports radio host. Your team loses in a conference championship. Meh, yeah. I don't care.
I mean, if there's two teams in town, fine. If a Jets fan who's on the radio in New York says he doesn't care if the Giants lose, so what? He's got his flag in the Jets' ground. That's weird.
Yeah, it's a Jets fan doing mornings in Boston pulling 10 shares.
Yeah, really?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So
people in Boston like their sports?
I guess so, man.
I wanted to do Boston movies with him, but he probably wouldn't like those either.
No, he prefers New York movies.
Can we talk New York movies?
Convention coverage on The Score, sponsored by Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. And while here at Cubs Convention, stop by Lizzie McNeil's Irish Pub next door to the Sheridan for Tito's specials all weekend long. Hey, the only kind of Bulls news that we get is bad, and this news that's just breaking is actually really bad Bulls news. I'm going to bring it to you coming up on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Bogdanovich attacking Holiday on the left angle, swatted away by Wendell Carter Jr., number 40 on a 2-on-1, and Levine with a flush and a right-handed dunk.
Chuck Swirsky with the call, one of Wendell Carter's inconsistent, we'll say, highlights this season. Promising on the defensive end, promising at times when he's aggressive offensively, way too much foul trouble, but obviously a part of the Bulls' future and core, whatever that ends up being. Bottom of the hour on The Score, by the way, was brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. It's rivalry weekend for the Wolves as they host Rockford Saturday night in an Illinois Lottery Cup game, and they've got Milwaukee on Sunday afternoon. And for the 25th anniversary, parking is free, courtesy of Kia. Visit ChicagoWolves.com. From Casey Johnson, Bulls beat reporter, Chicago Tribune. A follow-up exam revealed ligament damage in Wendell Carter Jr.'s left thumb that may require surgery, per sources. Jim Boylan said that Carter went to a hand specialist. The team is going to announce the results later. So here's where it stands, per sources. As of now, the first specialist is advising surgery, but Carter could seek additional inputs and consultations. Either way, expect the rookie center to be sidelined for a stretch. Wendell Carter, going to miss a while.
Yeah, that's...
They just can't catch a break.
His development and getting more minutes was one of the few things to, I don't want to say look forward to, but watch. Maybe look forward to if you have high hopes for him. But that was one of the things that might draw you to a Bulls game.
Brutal. Just brutal.
Yeah. Closer to that number one.
Closer to the number one pick.
Closer to Zion Williamson, Oral Murray State racer who plays point guard. The biggest need on the basketball team.
And by the way, I kind of liked Fred Tucker. I disagree with your assessment. Because I think that just like Will Perdue with his tone about the Bulls, imagine that tone, right? And that's his dry personality or whatever in Boston. Indifference to the Patriots in an AFC title game. Brady's been there 13 years of his career. That's kind of telling about where that city is.
And here's something that I don't know what it sounds like to the guy who's on the tri-state when he's listening to that, because we're at the Cubs convention. The signal is sent back to the shop, and that's disseminated. So there's a little bit of lag time between our there's a little bit of gap. And I don't know, because you'd like the guests to start answering your question shortly after you ask it. And there was so much dead time, I couldn't tell if he didn't want to be on with us or if that's just his shtick or what.
Yeah,
I'd have to hear the over-the-air product.
Yeah, and have to hear his show and all that. Yeah,
but I don't want to so much where I'm going to go read, listen to the podcast when I get home. I'm fine.
I wouldn't think that you would, but just imagine being in that position, though. Indifference to the Bears advancing to the Super Bowl.
How close was it for you when the Bulls were in there?
I was happy for Bulls fans. Okay. I was ecstatic for Bulls fans because there were a bunch of good ones. When they won it in 91, that's exactly what my very small contribution to Chet Kopic's postgame show was, because I was in the Hancock building. He's in L.A. at the Forum. And I'm saying, the city is electric. I am so happy for those of you who went when Leon Benbow was playing point guard and they were terrible. I think he was a point guard. And I remember 75 when they got so close and got knocked out in the conference finals because the head coach, Dick Motta, wouldn't use any of the bench. And the starting five were just gassed. And they had a little bit of depth. So for those people, I was ecstatic. And from 92 through 98, the five of the last six, you know, the six they won, I got to go to all the cities. So as a guy who was just, you know, starting to travel a lot loving travel, you couldn't help but be excited about it. And everywhere that Bulls team went in the 90s, it felt like you were covering the Beatles or the Stones. Let me say the Stones. Shep, the Beatles would never condescend and tour.
Shep, if I ever get jaded, you and I set up to work together for a long, long, long time. If I ever get so jaded covering a Chicago sports team on the cusp of a championship, punch me in the face.
Like, I don't know. I look at our teams, and I don't think we have to worry about that, just of what history has kind of told us.
I know.
But it's, yeah, seriously. If I can't appreciate the Bears playing for their 13th NFC championship 2 decades from now, or whatever the heck it ends up being, like, yeah, kick me in the nuts and just call it a career.
Wait till Eloy and the boys are boat racing the American League. We'll see how you guys feel about that.
I'll be happy for you. I genuinely will. I will be happy as long as we can get travel.
As long as we can get travel.
Yeah. You got to cover them on the road.
Oh, yeah.
You got to bring the story of Eli's White Sox dynasty to the people.
Okay. All right. I'm down.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
How many years from now?
Right.
We're going to win the 20s, right? Can it happen in the 20s?
Yes, we're going to win the 20s.
How many years do you have to be on the air to win a decade? Seven? All right.
I'd say at least more than five.
Yeah, okay. All right. Get
if
it
you
done.
Completely dominate for five, is that enough?
Yeah.
Max second go-round in the roaring 20s.
Oh, let me tell you about the speakeasies.
I need advice from you on something I'm doing later on tonight. We are at Cubs Convention. We'll have Cubs guests coming on pretty regularly after 4 o'clock. It's McNeil and Parkins on the Score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.